Luscious listeners, welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 123, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your gaggle of gangly, googling gigglers.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
This episode is brought to you by the Webby Award winner Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create professional websites, blogs, portfolios, or online stores. Squarespace offers domain hosting, storage, easy-to-use web design platform to make sure your dream website is beautiful, easy to maintain, and they even now offer a cool, simple logo design tool.
Oh.
Yeah. I just checked it out today. And the best part is you don't need to be a hotshot designer or hotshot coder. So for a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code GOODJOBBRAIN. One word. All right. Before we start the show, I want to share a listener email with you guys. This is from Jessica. And she wrote in and said, "Good job, Brain. My name is Jessica and my trivia team, meow, 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 just got placed in the Texas State Finals."
What? Whoa. There's state finals?
State finals.
Oh. We only have city finals.
We have
Bay Area.
We're Northern California.
True.
Yeah, right. So, but not, well,
not
state.
Not state. Northern California.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. All wow. right, go Jessica.
Yeah. Wow.
And she says, "I just want to let y'all..."
Because they say that.
Y'all.
Yeah, sure.
No, that, apparently they write it in email.
<It's> so.
"That your podcast helped me answer a question tonight."
Ooh.
The question was, what candy company's name is a portmanteau of its founder and the place that it's headquartered?
Oh. Haribo.
Haribo, yeah. Haribo, yes.
Awesome.
She says, "I knew right away Haribo was the answer from listening to one of your previous episodes. Y'all are amazing." So congrats, Jessica and team Meow Meow Meow.
Wow.
I don't know when your state finals are, but wish you guys good luck.
Yeah,
meow, 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 meow.
Texas is a big state, too.
It is.
That's really is.
Quite an honor. Yeah. We couldn't even get that far.
Once we did. Once we touched
California is pretty big too.
Hey.
We won the grand championships once.
We did.
That's right.
That was the best day of my life.
Two major competitive universities in our area.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's like the Stanley Cup. Like our team name is etched on the trophy. You know what? If forever. They cannot take that away from us.
Until they throw it away.
Yeah.
Right. Until such time as
they need more space.
Yeah.
The platform.
But once we did taste greatness.
Yeah.
Anyways, all right. It's time for our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz. Hotcha. All right, I have a random Trivial Pursuit card here, and you guys have your Morning Zoo radio buzzers. Let's answer some questions. Here we go. What country shows symbols from I Ching on its flag? Colin.
I think that's South Korea.
Correct, South Korea. It's the four, it's called trigrams. The little kind of three lines on the four corners. Four trigrams represent heaven, earth, fire, and water. All right, Pink Wedge for pop culture. What soap opera aired daytime drama's first lesbian wedding?
Oh.
I mean, they're daytime drama.
Yeah, yeah. All My Children.
Correct.
Yay!
I don't think I could. Oh, Bold and Beautiful.
There was one that did all sorts of crazy storylines.
Pleasures, was it?
What?
Point. There
Treasures?
Was one.
Bold, yeah. Bold and Beautiful, All My Children, yeah. Days of Our Lives.
General Hospital.
General Hospital.
Yeah. No, the one I'm thinking, I think it had alien storylines.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I know the one you're talking about. It got kind of bananas.
Bananas. Yeah.
All right. Yellow Wedge. What New York Times columnist was dubbed the Cobra by serial nicknamer George W. Bush?
The Cobra.
The Cobra.
New York Times
columnist.
I'll guess.
Colin.
William Sapphire?
Incorrect.
Paul Krugman?
Incorrect. I don't know any of these people. Dana.
Maureen Dowd?
Maureen Dowd!
Cobra.
The Cobra. Yeah.
All right.
All right. Purple Wedge. What gay teen heartthrob entitled his 2007 memoir, Out of Sync? Dana.
Lance Bass.
Yes. The former NSYNCer came out in 2006. Green Wedge for science, kind of science, I guess, who beat out CNN to become the first Twitter user with 1 million followers. This is a very popular pub quiz question.
Yeah, I believe, first Chris, with 1 million followers?
First.
Is it Ashton Kutcher?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that.
Good job.
I know it because I know it. Yeah.
Yep. All right, here we go. Last question, Orange Wedge. What fitness franchise claims its unofficial motto is, quote, no makeup, no men, and no mirrors?
Everybody?
Curse. There's one right around the block here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't get it. What is it?
It's to not make women feel self-conscious while they're exercising. Right. So there are no mirrors. There's nobody looking at you. You're just doing exercise.
Oh, yeah. I see. All right, good job, brains. So this week's topic is inspired by a lot of people wrote in yearning for an episode about movies.
We talk a lot about movies.
I feel like we do, yeah.
I mean, a lot of our previous maybe quizzes, titles, actors, a lot of like celebrity kind of infused quizzes in our other episodes. But we never made an actual full episode about the silver screen or the history. And things like movies and definitely music is such a integral part of our entertainment culture.
And such fertile ground for trivia.
It's
just virtually limitless
movies
amount
like
of trivia.
Sports generate their own trivia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially with resources like the Internet Movie Database, which like instantly lets you see like, you know, what movies an actor was in, what movies an actor and another actor shared.
Absolutely.
How many steps you have to get from one person to Kevin Bacon. Yeah.
So finally, guys, today we're going to dedicate a whole episode to movies and movie stars and movie culture and movie production and wacky history and facts and all that stuff. So get out your popcorn and your snow caps and your red vines because we're going to the movies.
Hooray for Hollywood, where you're terrific if you're even good. Where anyone at all from Shirley Temple to Amy Semple is equally understood. Go out and try your luck, you might be Donald Duck. Hooray for Hollywood.
Well, I'll start us off here. And I'm glad you guys mentioned both IMDb and 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon at the top, because I love both of those things. Mm-hmm. I would say probably behind Wikipedia, I spend the most amount of time just wasted on the internet just browsing IMDb.
Oh.
Just link after link. You know, who was in this movie? Oh, they were in that movie? Oh, who was in this one?
Every time I watch a movie, I have my phone out on IMDb.
And
I get made fun of a lot for having to know who everybody was in that.
Or if I'm watching movies in the theater, the first thing after the movie's done, you walk out, so I was like, I gotta go check, who's this, where's this guy from?
So in that spirit, I've put together a quiz for you guys called Who Was In That? AKA The Right Place at the Right Time.
Okay.
And I assembled this quiz.
Okay.
I like colon.
Yeah. I assembled this quiz through linking on IMDb. I would start with one movie in mind and I would click around. So all of these movies, I'm going to give you a list of movies.
I love this.
I'm going to give you a list of 3 movies and you need to tell me who is the common thread. Who is in that? Who is in all 3 of the movies that I am naming?
And this is without the help of, this is just off the top of our head.
That's right.
Not like one actor who, you know, was in the background of all 3
These
movies.
Are all people like, and these are, none of these are uncredited. Edited, not an extra.
Okay.
We're buzzing in?
Yes, go ahead and buzz in.
I love
it. I will give you 3 movies, and for no other reason than it tickles me, I will be reading these in the first person. So, I was in Armageddon, Sin City, and Moonrise Kingdom. Who am I? Dana.
You're Bruce Willis.
I am Bruce Willis.
Yes, he was in Moonrise Kingdom. That's
right. All right, so you guys get the concept. Here we go.
Okay.
I was in The King's Speech. Mm. I was in Planet of the Apes, the remake. And I was in Fight Club. Who am I? Karen.
Helena Bonham Carter.
Correct. Yes.
And it was actually her in Planet of the Apes. It's the...
The 2001.
It's not like her voice.
Right, not her voice, yes.
She was actually in the
She was in the suit,
costume.
Yes. She was Ari, I believe, was her character's name in the suit. But I'm glad you mentioned that. Some of these may be voices They might be.
Okay.
I was in The Blues Brothers, When Harry Met Sally, and Star Wars. Am I?
Which Star Wars?
Dana.
You're Carrie Fisher.
I am Carrie Fisher. Yes, she was. She was Marie in When Harry Met Sally, their friend they tried to hook up. She was obviously Princess Leia in Star Wars.
Oh yeah.
And in Blues Brothers.
Oh yeah.
In Blues Brothers, she was Jake's ex-girlfriend who was hunting him down, trying to kill him, sort of over the course of the movie.
Oh.
Famous scene with her with a machine gun. Yes. I was in Natural Born Killers.
Mm-hmm.
Bowfinger. And Weird Science.
Oh, interesting.
Whoa.
Who am I? Karen.
Are you Anthony Michael Hall?
I'm not Anthony Michael Hall. I have very recently made much, much, much money and fame portraying a superhero who wears a suit.
They all do.
Made of metal.
Oh.
Robert Downey Jr. Yeah.
Yes, I'm Robert Downey Jr.
Like,
yes.
Everything.
He was Wayne Gale. He was the tabloid reporter in Natural Born Killers.
Huh.
He was Ian, one of the snobby teens in Weird Science.
Huh.
And he was Jerry Renfro. He was the producer that Steve Martin's trying to impress when he's in the restaurant in Bowfinger.
Huh.
I like Bowfinger.
Bowfinger's, I think,
Chubby
is...
Chubby Ray.
Yeah, Bowfinger makes me laugh. I was in Blade Runner.
Okay.
Wall Street. And Steel Magnolias. Who am I? Blade Runner, Wall Street, and Steel Magnolias.
Man.
Dana.
Daryl Hannah?
Daryl Hannah.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. She was the sex robot. Yeah.
She was.
She was the replicant. Yeah, she was Pris in Blade Runner. She was Darian in Wall Street and Anel in Steel Magnolias.
Huh.
All right, we're getting down to some of the smaller roles here, so, all right.
This is hard. These are some movies I haven't really watched. All right.
Okay.
I was in Total Recall,
mm-hmm.
Last Action Hero, and Casino. Who am I?
Sharon Stone.
Yes, I am Sharon Stone.
Yes.
I was in The Truman Show,
mm-hmm.
Saving Private Ryan, and 12 Years a Slave. Who am I?
Wow.
This person is definitely a character actor.
Mm.
I am Paul Giamatti.
Oh, that's great.
I am Paul Giamatti, yes.
Right.
The text, the director's in Truman Show. He was Sergeant Hill in Saving Private Ryan.
Wow.
And he was Freeman. He was like the evil, you know, slave dealer in 12 Years a Slave.
Huh. Yeah.
All right, and this is one of my favorite examples and why I called this one The Right Place at the Right Time. I was in all of the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I was in all of the Matrix trilogy. And I was in the first three Transformers movies. Who am I?
Whoa. Voices or actor? Like
in the Transformers movie, I played a voice.
Oh.
Karen.
Frank? Welker?
No, not Frank Welker. It is Hugo Weaving.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yes. Agent Smith.
Sorry.
Oh, man.
Boo. That shouldn't have been a hard one.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think
And here's a fun trivia question that you'll see on movie boards a lot on the internet. Who is the only person to have been killed by an alien in the Aliens movies, a Terminator in the Terminator movies, and a Predator in the Predator movies?
Wow.
Is it Bill Paxton?
It is.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
The answer that people are looking for is Bill Paxton. Now,
game over, man.
There is a little bit of dispute. So he's in the first Terminator movie. He's one of the punks, you know, that Arnold Schwarzenegger accosts at the very beginning, you know, when he's still like nude walking around. You don't actually see him die. So that's kind of an actually point of contention. So just be advised.
I'm pretty sure he probably
yes.
died.
All right, last one, guys. Which are the only two characters to appear in all six Star Wars movies played by the same actor?
Oh.
Karen.
That's Palpatine.
Incorrect.
Is it C-3PO and R2-D2?
It is C-3PO and R2-D2.
Yep.
Voiced and or played by the same actors in all six movies.
Oh.
All right. Good job, guys.
So I want to take you back, not to the very beginning of movies, but to the early sort of days of popular cinema. This will come up in trivia a lot. The first talkie, as they used to call them, or the first feature film, full-length motion picture that actually had synchronized talking sound, was not a silent picture, was... Anyone?
Yeah, was this...
This is why we're not stage
Was this
champions.
The original jazz singer?
This was the jazz singer.
Yeah.
Yes, starring Al Jolson. So that was the first talkie. It's also the first musical. And I want to talk about the technology that it used, because this is some really weird stuff. Take a guess as to, like, say you run a movie theater.
Yep.
You're going to show the first talkie. What gets delivered to you?
I have a guess.
Is the medium?
I would guess that you get a reel or a set of film reels and a record.
Yes,
play them synchronously.
You are absolutely right. This is the... I actually don't know how it's pronounced. I tried to find it. It's either the... It's called Vitaphone or possibly Vitaphone. It comes from the Latin sound and living and sound, right?
I bet it'd be Vitaphone, like vitamin.
Okay, so we'll call it Vitaphone.
Well, and if British it turns people out, call it vitamin.
Oh, what are we going to do? I don't know. So I'm going to call it Vitaphone because vitamins.
Okay.
Now, the weird thing about Vitaphone and what they would do is they would film it while simultaneously recording the sound in the room onto a wax, you know, record. They actually had already started developing within Warner Brothers, which is where the Vitaphone system came from. They were already working on sound on film. What they could do was they would, you know, as they're shooting the film, they could listen in on the sounds and convert that into light and then expose it like an area on the side of the film and then read that back and retranslate it into sound. But it didn't sound as good when they were working on the two technologies. The quality was not very good at all. Now, the Vitaphone system actually sounded pretty great because they had, you know, recording grooves into records was already kind of something that was happening, and it sounded really nice. So Warner pushed ahead with Vitaphone. You might imagine that a lot of things could go wrong.
Yes.
Everything could, in fact, go wrong.
Yeah.
So, first of all, what they never had a problem with silent pictures was the sound of the cameras.
And
the
sound,
because as they're like clackety clackety clack, like rolling the film through, like this was not a problem. So they literally, when they were filming these first talkies, they had to take all the camera equipment and everything and put it all into a soundproof room where they were looking out windows, basically. And that was how they had to shoot this, to obscure the sounds of the cameras from what the microphones were picking up. This was actually a problem for movie directors because it actually restricted the dynamism of the shots that they could get because it was pointed through a window at the, you know, what's going on.
Yeah.
So that was a problem. If somebody blows a take, you know, it's like not only do you have the film that you just sort of wasted, but you were just recording this wax record, so throw that out. Start another one.
Do you have to start the movie all over again?
So you've now hit on problem number three, which is editing is now a colossal issue because now you can't just take the film, all the different parts of film,
edit two
and
things.
Splice up the scenes that you want. You can't edit it. You can't edit the record at all.
That's true.
So you basically, you had to like do the scene and they'd record into the wax, basically into the mold. And then they'd listen to it standing there on set and make sure that it sounds correct. And if that's good, if they're happy with it, then they run with that. So let's say you finished and distributed your Vitaphone movie. The theater now has to buy this entirely new projection system because it's not just like start the film and then go buy an off-the-shelf record player. There was a combination unit that you lined up the record with an arrow. We have this image of the, you know, the projectioner and the movie theater being the pimply-faced teen, you know? Like, it was really a difficult job, especially with this technology back in the day, because, like, if something starts to go wrong, you have to make little tiny little manual adjustments
to bring
speed
it back
of the film
sync.
And the speed of the... They had, like, levers that would... They would let you, like, do a little bit. Yeah, if things got out of sync, it would immediately go from being, like, really entertaining to really embarrassing.
Distracting.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, and of course, if you drop one of those discs, it shatters because they're not like vinyl. They're made out of shellac and like crushed up bits of
like
whatever.
Light. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, just gone. Oh, and then also you don't really have to worry about that because you can only really play these discs like 20 times
before
there's a noticeable drop in sound quality because of the, you know, the record groove getting worn out. So you've got to get more discs. But the thing is, Warner really pushed ahead with this and they were like, no, this is it. Meanwhile, as this is all happening, guess what? vast improvements are made in the sound to film technology, and that starts to get good. And of course, it's much more, nothing ever gets out of sync because the sound and the pictures are right
there.
Yeah. By the early 1930s, just a couple of years into Warner making this big push of like getting theaters to buy this expensive new equipment and doing all their movies on Vitaphone, sound to film started getting a lot better. And it was obvious
it won out.
That, yeah. And now there's a sort of a tight-knit community of people that actually works together with the movie studios and with like libraries and archival organizations to try to figure out what's on Vitaphone, where are the reels and where are the records. And they're trying to match up reels and records. So if as people discover the records, they're trying to be like, oh, I've got the reel.
Wow.
And they'll restore them and put them together and make them available.
I hate out of sync sound. It's so distracting. Yeah.
So it is amazing how small the duration is before your brain
is like, this is wrong.
Your brain is so good at seeing out of sync. And it's irritating. It drives people nuts.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys. I'll ask. Do you guys have like lingo at work that only your coworkers totally know, but if you were talking to somebody else, they would not know?
Jargon.
So I have a quiz for you guys about film crews, because they also have like slang and lingo for their jobs, things that come up for them. And I try to pick the things that are interesting and not too technical.
All right.
Inside movie.
Inside movies, behind the scenes. Let's start with this. What's above the line? Do you know what that means? Like on a crew, who's above the line?
Above the line.
Chris.
Oh, on a crew?
Mm-hmm. On a film production.
Is that like your name appears before the title of the movie and the credit sequence?
So people whose names do appear there, yes, are above the line. It's the creative part of the production. They're the writer, producer, director, actors.
Ah.
And below the line are the people, the crew
member.
Oh, okay.
Crew.
All right.
What about the honey wagon?
What is that?
I believe those are the porta potties, right? The portable toilets?
Yeah, the bathrooms and dressing rooms, yes.
Huh.
Yeah, I have noticed in other things that honey is a euphemism for
poop.
Yeah.
Honey wagon.
The honey wagon. If somebody said hot points, what do you think that
hot
means?
Points.
What would you do?
Hot point.
Take my clothes off?
Delicious toast triangle.
Take your marks, maybe? Like
hot points.
Hot points.
No. Hot mics?
It means that they're carrying something heavy and you should get out of their way.
Oh.
Like, because you're moving heavy machinery around all the time.
Hot
so
points.
Hot points.
Right.
Get
it's
out of
hot
here.
And pointy. We're covering all my bases.
Right. Yeah, that gets you out of the way. If somebody says this is heavy, I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Great, it's
hot points.
Hot points. But, oh, better get out of the way.
What about The Last Man? There's a rule in film productions about The Last Man. What is that?
Oh,
what could be the last?
I've heard of this, but I can't. Yeah.
Maybe something related to like shooting, I don't know, like the last man out shooting on a set for the day or something. I don't know.
It's the last person to get their food for lunch. You can't start lunch until, you can't actually eat until everybody's gotten food. Or you're not supposed to.
Oh, okay.
People get upset when people break the last man rule. Okay, so here are two common shots, two things that people talk about in terms of shooting. What's a choker shot?
Whoa, choker shot.
Or a screamer. They also call it a screamer. Yeah.
Is it tightly zoomed in
on
the face?
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's an extreme close-up.
Extreme close-up.
I read something that said if you called it an extreme close-up, they'd think you were an amateur. It's
a choker
or a screamer. Yeah.
Oh.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now we know.
Good to know.
Yeah.
What about a martini shot?
Martini shot.
Is it just a shot of someone drinking any liquid?
No. It is the last shot of the day.
I have heard that before.
Wait, what?
Because after this, we
go get our martinis.
Yeah.
People talk about that a lot on set because it's important. You don't know necessarily that they cut some scenes. It's like you should start wrapping up your work for the day. This is the martini shot. We're done.
Got it.
So walkie-talkies are really important for communicating on set. All this stuff about walkie-talkie etiquette. So what's 10 for?
Okay.
Yeah, I understand.
Message received.
Yeah, okay.
How about 10-1?
10-1.
Repeat that last message?
No. Nope.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say again. 10-4. I was going to guess that.
is I've got to go to the bathroom. Number one. And 10-2 is...
Yeah.
Honey wagon time.
Yeah.
What's 10-3 combination of?
You don't want to know.
I couldn't find it. I was trying to find out.
I pee and poop this again.
I was like, and then 10-4 is I understand. It's a funny
machine.
Okay.
Pee, poop, question marks, understand.
Yeah. How about, what's a hot brick?
Something in the honey.
It's not like a hot points.
So that hot brick.
A power strip or something?
Oh, you're kind of close.
Hot brick.
It's a working walkie-talkie or a hot walkie-talkie.
Okay, all right.
And a cold brick is a...
dead one.
A dead walkie-talkie.
Like hot mic.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Who's got a hot brick? I got a cold brick.
All right. On the set, who's the juicer? What's the juicer?
Electrician?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, good.
Yeah. Okay, last one. What's golden time?
Golden time.
Oh.
Golden time. It's like that magic set of lighting, right? Like early in the morning or at the end
That's
of the day.
That's the magic hour.
Oh.
That is a thing they
do. It's like twilight, right? It's like late in the day.
I think it's...
Golden time, it's like extra overtime, right?
Yes.
It's like double... Yeah. So there's regular time, overtime, and then golden time.
Yeah. Makes everybody...
Which pays really well.
Double pay.
I see.
Makes producers nervous.
Right. Golden time.
Wow. But magic hour is also a
thing they talk about too with the lighting.
Now it can sound like a
I got a cold brick here.
Hot points, guys.
There's a really awesome blog I found that talks about it. It's a guy who's a assistant cameraman, and it's called theblackandblue.com. It was really well written. I read a few articles and then I made the quiz, but I was...
That's cool. I love, as you said, like, I love those lists of glossaries when it tells you, like, this is not really used in the industry. Like, if you use this, you'll sound like an outsider.
Yeah.
Right.
I love those.
Very inside movies.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I have a opening question for you. What do the films Transmorphers, Snakes on a Train, and Atlantic Rim have in common?
I can guess.
Chris.
They are shameless knockoffs. Yeah. They're straight to DVD shameless knockoffs.
They sound familiar, but
these films are considered mockbusters.
That's a good word.
That's great.
A mockbuster is often and usually a low budget film created with the intention of, quote, tying in with a major film with a similar title or theme.
That's right.
Mockbusters today, these films actually never really make it to the theaters. They're not meant to make it to the theaters. Mm. Like you said, Chris, they're mostly direct to video or direct to DVD or sometimes
TV movies. Well, they're supposed
to
be like on DVD when the actual film in question is still in the theaters, so it's fresh in people's minds.
Right,
And so here's the thing. So it's not... It's not necessarily they're trying to trick the audience. I think your usual audience is smart enough to know that the right movie, the blockbuster hit, is Snakes on a Plane, Snakes on a Train. The way the industry talks about it is that they really see themselves as a tie-in.
Well, they know that there's going to be a huge marketing campaign behind the real thing. And so that interest that is generated for snakes in a mode of transportation, enough of that they'll just get free advertising for their own movie.
Effect.
I would like this one too.
You guys are being far more charitable than I. I think that, like, if you're putting together a movie called Transmorphers, I feel like you're trying to trick people.
Yeah.
I feel like you're trying to just ride their coattails.
There was this animated movie that had some other random title, but it was set in a cold climate. It was set in, I don't know, Alaska or something. Frozen Land. They retitled it Frozen Land as Frozen was coming out.
It's not just a recent thing. I mean, the movie industry has been doing the business of mockbusters for a very long time. For example, in 1959, there's The Creature from the Black Lagoon, very famous. And there was another movie called The Monster of Piedras Blancas, which was definitely a mockbuster of Creature of the Black Lagoon. Mm-hmm. Star Wars, Colin. Star Wars had a bunch of kind of knockoffs or imitators. There was a Battle Beyond the Stars and Star Crash.
Sure, sure.
And a lot of people would call mockbusters B movies, right? Mm-hmm. And do you guys know where B movies come from? The term B movies.
Well, I just figured it was like A side, B side. Yeah, that's just what I figured.
So back in the day, the golden age of Hollywood, when you know people went to the movie theaters for like half a day, they have double features. Your first feature is the main big feature.
And that's the A movie.
That's the A movie, and then your B movie is the cheaper, lower budget. Kind of schlocky, you know, later in the day.
That makes sense.
And so now that, you know, movie theaters don't do double feature anymore, I think like in the 50s they stopped, but somehow that term still stuck with a lower budget movie, which is a B movie. But throughout history, we've seen a lot of movie trends or themes in audience taste. They kind of, it's not just tied to mockbusters.
Right.
It ties to even major blockbusters, right? I remember in the 90s, there was a lot of natural disaster movies or end of the world movies. There was Deep Impact. There was Armageddon. They're all kind of bunched together. And there was some sort of like marketing taste for a particular type of movie. And like you can say currently we're in a superheroes craze.
Right.
And all of your major blockbusters. Not
also,
blockbusters.
Also the dystopian teen young adult movie. I feel like there's also a lot of those right now.
Mm-hmm. But no one has done the business of mockbusters as well as the company known as The Asylum. They have made a great business model, and this is what they do. They will jump on publicities of upcoming blockbusters and make low-budget versions, either for TV or for DVD or for streaming.
Yeah.
And those come out around the same time your major, the major original, I guess, film is coming out in the theaters. So The Asylum was founded by former film industry executives. And in the beginning, the company was doing low budget films, usually in like the horror kind of genre. But in 2005, something really interesting happened. They produced a low budget adaptation of War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells.
Okay.
Which was released in the same year as Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds.
So just,
and this is still in the industry of home video rentals. Blockbuster ordered a significant amount of Mockbuster War of the Worlds. And so it made them think, this is something we're onto. And this was kind of the changing point. But now it's like they're latching onto this idea of mockbusters. Funny enough, Asylum never lost money on a film. Well, because they don't spend that much.
Well, I mean, so much of the budget for films is marketing, right?
And they don't have to do.
They don't have to do it.
Yeah. Here I have a quick lightning round.
Okay.
I'm going to name the Asylum mockbuster.
Okay.
Tell me what the source movie is.
All right.
Okay. All right. The Da Vinci Treasure.
the Da Vinci Code.
We probably don't have to buzz into
You're right.
Yeah, let's do it. Pirates of Treasure Island.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
I Am Omega. This is a clever one.
I am Omega.
I Am Legend?
It's I Am Legend, which is based on the Omega Man.
Oh, man.
So they combined both.
Yes.
I Am Omega. Paranormal Entity.
Paranormal activity.
Oh, yeah.
I can see people getting confused about that one really easily.
We picked up this, we never watched it, but it's this like CG animated movie. The title is Ratatouing.
Yes!
R-A-T-A-T-O-I-N-G.
I'm not even diving into the animated mockbusters. The animated Pixar knockoffs there's so many of them, and they're horrible. Like, some of the animated knockoffs.
It's like watching a PlayStation 1 video game.
They're done by a Brazilian company that keeps churning them out.
Yeah.
Ratatouing. And there's
Ratatouing.
I think one of them is, What's Up? A House with Balloons.
That one I kind of want to watch.
Yeah.
That one actually, you know, that's
What's Up? Balloon to the Rescue.
Balloon to the Rescue.
Video Brinquedo, a Brazilian CGI animation studio, made a Little Cars as well, which is a Cars Ratatouille. The Frog Prince, not to be confused with The Princess and the Frog.
Right.
Kind of shameless.
Monsters Limited Liability Corporation.
Monsters LLC.
Monsters GmbH. But outside of the business of mockbusters, The Asylum made quite a pretty penny on what they thought was just a tongue-in-cheek movie that spawned a whole bunch of other movies. Mm-hmm. And this movie was, of course, probably heard of it, Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This spawned a whole bunch of Asylum monster movies, mm-hmm. including Mega Piranha, Mega Shark versus Crocosaurus, and Mega Python versus Gatoroid. Of course, probably we know Sharknado. Sharknado 2 just released on Sci-Fi. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of also part of Asylum's business model. Aside from Mockbusters, they also have these kind of these TV movies that are to Sci-Fi mm-hmm. or to Lifetime. Yeah. They're not trying to be a real blockbuster.
No, they're very tongue-in-cheek.
Very tongue-in-cheek. Yeah.
Which one did they put on Lifetime? Do you know?
Married to a Sharktopus.
Yeah. My stepson, my shark.
Not without my shark.
Not without my shark. I believe just in the last week or so, I was flipping through and caught a bit of Mega Shark versus Mecha Shark.
Wow!
Yes, yes, which is exactly what you think it is.
I can't underwater? Believe.
Well, you know, parts of it are underwater, Dana, but no, it's mostly on land.
That's what I was. Yeah. I was like,
yeah.
I just don't. I just wanted to say I don't understand how Mega Shark and Mecha Shark didn't reconcile their differences and or team up.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like they have more in common than
right.
differences.
Yeah, yeah.
What if they reproduce? Shark baby.
But Mecha Shark is a robot, right?
Robot shark.
There's no reproductive organs.
Hey man, nanosperm.
Ew.
I don't know, you know, nanosperm. But, you know, fill in the details.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
For example.
Hey, I'm just problem solving here, you guys.
Yeah, yeah,
it's true, yeah. I'm sorry.
And you've just been hired by Asylum.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. A word from our sponsor.
I'm Lando Calrissian, one of the best Sabacc players in the galaxy. For me, quality and price are everything, so I turn to Squarespace for all my website needs. With easy video embedding and an elegant sound player, it's easy for me to show off my little maneuver at the Battle of Tanab for anyone who wants to see it. I also like to maintain a blog for my handsome thoughts, photo galleries to showcase my personal array of blue capes, map integration to pinpoint my favorite places in Bespin. Squarespace, you too can have a website that truly belongs with us here in the clouds. I love a good deal, and I'm in good spirits to share. So get 10% off your first purchase using the code GOODJOBBRAIN.
You're listening to Good Job Brain. Smooth puzzles, smart trivia. Good Job Brain.
I would like to begin this next segment by playing a very short clip for you guys from the movie The Charge at Feather River from 1953.
Oh.
It's a Western.
Okay.
Wilhelm!
Yeah, I'll just fill my pipe.
I know that guy. Yeah. It's Wilhelm.
You do know that guy, Chris, and his name is Wilhelm. Mm. And these days, although this movie is largely unknown, it is famous for giving a name to perhaps the most famous sound effect in Hollywood history. And I believe Chris knows what this is. Chris?
The Wilhelm Scream.
Yes, yeah. The Wilhelm Scream. And what the Wilhelm Scream is a stock sound effect of the man screaming. This was not uncommon, especially in the 1950s and 60s, of if you had a particular sound effect, it would show up again and again and again, particularly within one given studio's movies.
Oh, like a library.
Like, exactly. They would create a library of here's, you know, arrow being shot, here's sword clash, you know. Yeah. So as a movie maker or sound engineer, you don't need to recreate these sounds every single time. And this particular scream has become one of the most, if not the most, used stock sound effect ever.
Appeared in this movie.
So let's back up a couple years. It was first used in a movie called Distant Drums from 1951. It was a Gary Cooper movie. and it was basically about explorers, you know, in and around the Everglades and their interactions with the Native American tribes. Safe to say, not a terribly politically correct movie today's standards.
Got it.
But one of the scenes in Distant Drums featured a man getting attacked by an alligator as they're going through the Everglades, and they recorded originally for that movie several samples of a guy screaming that then they would lay in afterward, and that was the source of the original scream. So, but it didn't take its name until, as I played for you just now, The Charge at Feather River, where Wilhelm, and then he gets shot in the leg. And so, as I say, you know, this went into a library of sound effect vault kind of thing, and you'd use it when needed. And it was actually featured in, you know, some big name movies into the 50s and 60s. It was in A Star Is Born. Mm-hmm. It was in PT-109. So why is this a big deal? This was a big deal because this sound effect was reintroduced to the world in a small movie you may have heard of called Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Ben Burtt, who was the sound designer on Star Wars, as well as a number of other George Lucas movies, he found this clip on a reel, basically, as he was creating all the sound effects for Star Wars. And he found it labeled, man being eaten by alligator.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you're going to need
just
that.
Just in case.
Sure. And partly out of his need for a sound of someone falling, and I think partly out of his just sort of mischievous streak, he decided to put it into Star Wars. So let me play you the clip where it appears in Star Wars.
I'm trying to guess where it is.
This is when Luke and Leia are escaping across the chasm and the stormtrooper is on the other side.
Okay.
It's one of those sound effects where once you hear it, it just jumps out at you. Yeah. So from there, really, this is just, you know, the late 70s, early 80s. It kind of exploded.
Well, and Star Wars was sort of an influential film
on
many young directors.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it, in some ways, I guess it kind of became like an in-joke, almost, is the way to put it.
Right.
Yeah, in-joke slash homage slash, like, Easter egg for other people in the industry. You know, that as a sound designer, you'd find a way to sneak the Wilhelm scream into your movie just so that everyone else who's in the know can be like, oh, hey, Wilhelm scream, and kind of, you know, nudge their date.
Yeah. You're so cool.
You know the joke, apparently.
Stop talking during the movie.
George Lucas uses this a lot. Steven Spielberg has used it a lot.
Huh.
Quentin Tarantino, when he was first introduced to the Wilhelm scream, kind of just fell in love with it. He has used it. Peter Jackson has used it as well. And it's kind of become, you know, and all of these people that I just named, they're film nerd directors. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They all really kind of like, I think, tying themselves to this rich history of the Wilhelm scream. I don't have the time here to list all of the movies that this sample has been used in, but I will give you
just a
sampling of some of the greatest hits of movies wherein you can find the Wilhelm scream. In no particular order, Despicable Me, Inglourious Basterds, Reservoir Dogs, Kung Fu Panda, Beauty and the Beast, and Aladdin, Raiders of the Lost Ark, as I mentioned, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And this one, I think, merits special note because it's actually used as the sound of one of Mola Ram's thugs being eaten by an alligator.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a wink-wink inside of a wink-wink.
Wow.
Toy Story, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, and the Two Towers. Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. Pirates of the Caribbean. Transformers. Up. Titanic. And every single one of the Star Wars movies.
Wow.
So again, we have Star Wars to thank for many things, and in perpetuating the Wilhelm scream is one of them. Wilhelm scream.
What about the guy who screamed?
The guy who screamed, Karen, I'm so glad you asked. Ben Burtt himself did a little bit of research into this, and a couple other you know, magazines and film writers have dug into this. By all accounts, it seems that the man who created the original scream was Sheb Woolley, who you may not know the name right away. He was a famous voice actor, and he did some novelty songs. His most famous hit was The Purple People Eater.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
So Sheb Woolley, a Purple People Eater, also gave us the Wilhelm scream. Here it is. Here it features in Batman Returns. This is this is Batman tossing a thug off the roof.
Okay.
It's so dramatic.
Yeah.
Dramatic.
I'm going to talk about Alan Smithy, who's extremely prolific. Some of his credits include Hellraiser, Bloodline, Mighty Ducks, the movie, the first Face-Off. He directed Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You video, as well as Paula Cole's I Don't Want to Wait video.
Whoa!
He wrote 5 issues of the Daredevil comic book, and he wrote 2 episodes of MacGyver.
A renaissance man.
He dabbles in everything.
Yeah, wow.
Who is this Alan Smithy? You might be asking yourself.
I don't know. You guys know.
I know.
Yeah. Alan Smithy is a pseudonym for people who don't want to take credit for their work, you know, for whatever reason. Like, maybe it was political reasons. Maybe they felt like...
embarrassed.
They're embarrassed. Or they sometimes when you're working on a creative thing with other people and you're the creative vision holder and somebody else gets in there, like, you're like, well, this wasn't really my vision.
It's not me. Yeah.
I don't want my name on it.
Interesting.
Alan Smithy. Yeah. He has a really long IMDb page.
That is so cool. It's like a code name.
They stopped using it because everybody figured out the code. So, or they stopped using it on movies.
That was just fairly recently, right? That the Directors Guild said they were no longer going to accept that, right?
Yeah, it was early 2000s. So it started in 1969 on the death of a gunfighter. The director of that movie's name was Robert Totten. There was just a lot of drama with the lead actor, Richard Widmark. Richard Widmark didn't like working with Totten, so he got him kicked off the film, got him replaced with something else. The film was almost done. Like, there wasn't that much shooting left. The new director, Don Siegel, finished it up. And then at the end, he was like, I don't really feel like this was my movie. And Totten was like, I don't feel like it was my movie either. So they went to the Directors Guild of America. Directors had to put their real names on there because they wanted to protect directors in case the producer's like, hey, we're going to say somebody else made this movie. They were like, no, it has to be the director. So the Directors Guild was like, yeah, I see why you don't want to put your name on this. Okay. They came up with a new name. It's kind of like inconspicuous. It sounds like somebody's name, but it's not anybody's name. It got released under Alan Smithy, and people liked the movie. It actually was a hit. Like, critics were really impressed. They're saying, we've never seen anything from Alan Smithy before.
So, like, they just expect it to just sort of bomb and go away. And like, oh, who is this first-time director?
And they were not supposed to tell people that they worked on it. And, I mean, I don't think that maybe they did. But it got out eventually that Alan Smithy was a pseudonym for those two guys. So that was 1969. And then a movie came out the year before where the director also wanted to get his name off of it. So he retroactively made his movie, an Alan Smithy movie. There were a lot of movies made by, like, auteurs. Dune, for instance. David Lynch didn't like the TV editing of Dune. So he made it Judas Booth, like, as Judas Iscariot and John Wilkes Booth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That's just for the TV version of Dune.
I believe also in The Simpsons, when Mr. Burns has a Burns for All Seasons movie made about his life, I think it shows up as an Alan Smithy film.
Really?
Yeah.
So nerdy. We have one last quiz segment.
Yes, I'd like to close this out with a movie quotes quiz.
Hey, I remember you did this last time, and you tricked us.
Right, this is not a trick.
Okay.
There's no trick here. However, all of the quotes are certain kinds of quotes. They are quotes in which people in the movies say the name of another character in the movie. So I'm going to leave that part of it as a blank.
Okay.
Got it.
Right? And then you are going to tell me what character name did they say.
Okay.
Now, implicit in this is you figuring out what movie the quote is from, which would then lead you probably to what the character name is.
So we're not doing who is saying the
not
quote.
Not who is saying the
but
quote.
But the name.
Not the name of the movie, but all these things should follow.
Got it.
You know, once you figure out what name should be in there. Here we go. That's the secret grand adventure of the infamous blank. You spent 3 days on a beach drinking rum. Karen.
Jack Sparrow.
Oh, okay. Yes. All right.
In the first movie.
Pirates of the Treasure Chest. All right. Okay, here's one.
Okay.
If blank had all the judges and all the politicians in New York, then he must share them or let us others use them. Colin.
Don Corleone.
Oh. Yes.
From The Godfather.
Yep. I'm here to rescue you. I've got your R2 unit. I'm here with blank.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, I'm going to give it to you because he says...
Ben Kenobi.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh.
All right.
From
Luke Skywalker, Star Princess
Star
Leia
Battles.
Star, yes.
Star Battles.
Star Battles.
Yeah. I'm going to vote for blank because she got hit by that bus. Carrie.
Regina George.
Regina yeah. George, yes.
From Mean Girls.
While you were out stealing hubcaps, I lettered in track. I can't believe it. Blank turned jock? Karen.
Danny Zuko.
Danny Zuko turned yes. jock.
Right. Yes.
From wow. Greece.
Yeah.
Excellent.
A woman's heart is a deep ocean of secrets. But now you all know that there was a man named blank, and that he saved me in every way a person can be saved.
Oh, what's the full name? Oh, man.
What is the full name? Gotta get first name and last name.
It's not ringing a bell for us.
Karen.
Jack Wilson?
Oh, it's very close. Get the last part of the name correct.
I did?
Somethingson. No. Jack Blankson.
Is this Titanic?
From Titanic, yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
Jack
man.
Nicholson.
His name was Jack Nicholson. He was the prettiest boy in the world. Jack Dawson.
Dawson! Yes,
Rose
yes, yeah. Yeah.
Jack Dawson, yes, yes. Rose Dawson. You know, like,
Wait, did they get married?
No. I don't think so.
She did changed.
They?
No, but oh, she changed she? Her last name to honor his last name when she came to America.
That is so weird. Yeah. I did not remember that part of the movie.
That is strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't just take someone else's
she
name.
She just met this dude like from anyway. Okay. Sure.
And who, in case she doesn't hang, can say she started with a bang? Blank.
And who, in case she doesn't hang? That's gotta be.
Can say she started with a
from
bang.
A musical.
Blank. It is from a musical.
Oh.
Karen.
Roxy Hart.
Roxy Hart.
Yeah.
Actual, Dana got it simultaneously.
Yeah. Actual hanging.
Actual hanging. Yeah. Yeah. Actual
not
bang.
Not hanging out with hanging my out. Girls. Yeah, yeah. It's right. The death penalty.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the king and queen of the spring prom, Tommy Ross and blank.
Oh.
Colin.
Carrie.
What
is her last name? Wilson.
Carrie Dawson. No, it's Carrie White.
Carrie White.
Oh, you can remember that because
Stephen King's
she gets coded in.
Yeah. She gets coded in. Exactly. Carrie White.
Because the mean kids rigged it.
Yeah, because symbolism.
Sure.
Here's one you might know. Sassy, blank, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to cross here.
Sassy, blank.
Oh.
I'm sorry, but we're going to have to cross here. The character is addressing two characters. Okay, one of them is named Sassy.
Oh,
and the other one is named Blank. The character who is addressing Sassy and Blank is named Shadow.
Oh,
Karen, what's the answer?
Sassy. Oh my god, it's the Staffordshire Bull Terrier. Champ. No, not Champ.
Oh, so close. Chance.
Chance.
From?
Oh, my God. Homeward Bound.
Keaton always said, I don't believe in God, but I'm afraid of him. Well, I believe in God, and the only thing that scares me is blank. Colin.
Is that Kaiser Soze?
That's Kaiser Soze.
From Usual Suspects.
Yep.
Nice.
And finally, well, Captain Blank, I had to see this for myself, and I told you that if you were ever a shrimp boat captain, I'd be your first mate.
Forrest Gump.
Yes, yeah. Forrest Gump.
Lieutenant Dan.
By Lieutenant Dan.
But you ain't got no legs, Lieutenant Dan.
Stay tuned for part two of this episode, which is the entire script acted out by Karen. That was good, that quiz. Like, it throws your brain into that, I know this, what is it mode.
Right.
All right, and that is our movie episode. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about screams, about production lingo, about the Vitaphone, and about snakes on a train and other mockbusters. You can find our show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and also on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And thanks to our sponsor, Squarespace. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.